Listen to the voices of our world.
Whoever does not have the courage to defend human beings does not have the right to speak in God's name.
So rather than just complaining about the religious right, it's time for progressive people of faith to organize and mobilize.
We find our way with people who are broken, with people who are hurting.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. What if you woke up tomorrow and while brushing your teeth, you heard a reporter on your favorite morning news program say that the president had just signed a law that gave official preference to followers of a particular religious viewpoint and not one you share? Suddenly, you're an outsider, outside of what is sanctioned, outside of power, outside of everything protection and power bring. Couldn't happen, you say. This is America. But some of the folks who participated in a recent event billed as Justice Sunday would be just fine with that arrangement, assuming they were the sanctioned. We'll talk today about the blurring of the separation between church and state with the founder and editor-in-chief of Sojourners Magazine and the author of the New York Times best-selling book, God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It, Jim Wallace. And with author, lecturer, and Jesuit priest, Dean Brackley.
Sunday morning, slow beat seething through the screens and the open window.
A friend of mine remembers bits and pieces of her days in Catholic primary school. She remembers reciting a prayer at the beginning of the school day, and she remembers saying the Pledge of Allegiance. Most importantly, she remembers never confusing the two. She remembers the words in the New Testament, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." That logic would later become a foundational principle in the formation of the first United States government. The U.S. Constitution was crafted by founding fathers with respect for the turmoil suffered by English separatists who had settled Virginia in 1620, having withdrawn from the Church of England. Another disenfranchised group, English Roman Catholics, settled Maryland in 1632. The Constitution was drafted to form a more perfect union than the one our ancestors had left. American currency bears the words, "In God we trust," but the preamble to the Constitution deliberately avoids the word God. And the First Amendment stipulates, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion." So what propelled the extreme right flank of American Christians to rally round Justice Sunday? Well, primarily the flap is about the fact that 9 out of 215 judges nominated by President Bush have not been confirmed. That's 9. Bill Clinton had 69 would-be appointees rejected. And who makes up this God is on our side crew? The group includes Reverend James Dobson, who made the cartoon character SpongeBob SquarePants more famous by proclaiming him gay, and preacher Tony Perkins, not the psycho actor, who purchased former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke's mailing list for $81,000. Unfortunately, Senator Bill Frist, Congressman Tom DeLay, and others feel it's politically astute to throw in with this group. But a well-respected advocate for social justice, the founder of the Sojourners community and editor of Sojourners Magazine, Jim Wallace, has written a book that begs to differ. An evangelical Christian, Jim Wallace's latest book is God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. Kathy Golden talks with Jim Wallace.
Jim, it's good to hear your voice again. I'm speaking today with Jim Wallace, who is the editor-in-chief of Sojourners Magazine, which he founded 30 years ago. He was also very instrumental in forming the Call to Renewal. And his latest book is God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. Jim, when I first saw the book, it hit such a chord with me because one of the things I've been upset about is the melding of church and state lately. So I thought when I looked at the book, I said, he's going to speak to that. Let's start with the jumping off point of you quoting Abraham Lincoln. Our task should not be to invoke religion and the name of God by claiming God's blessing and endorsement for all our national policies and practices, saying in effect that God is on our side. Rather, as Lincoln put it, we should worry earnestly whether we are on God's side.
Yeah, I think Lincoln got it right. These are the two ways that religion and God have been invoked in our national life. One is the God on our side way, which leads to a lot of very dangerous things, triumphalism, a lot of political hubris, so self-righteousness, overextension, and usually bad foreign policy, the unilateral and preemptive wars. The other way, to worry and earnestly pray to be on God's side, brings in the things that are missing in politics, like humility and reflection and penitence even, and perhaps, best of all, accountability. So I think Lincoln did have it right, and King did it best. Martin Luther King Jr. did it best. He had a Bible in one hand, Constitution in the other hand, and he really convened a moral discourse on politics that held us accountable to our best democratic and religious traditions.
Well said, and I think some of us at least sense why the right is getting it wrong, but why doesn't the left get it, Jim? Tell me that.
Well, you know, it was just a few decades ago when the Democratic Party was vitally linked to a civil rights movement led by black churches. And there is this long and wonderful prophetic tradition that, of course, you know, Marinol is such a wonderful part of King. And, you know, I have Martin King usually sitting on one shoulder whispering in my ear, and Dorothy Day sits on the other shoulder and whispers in the other ear. And Oscar Romero, whose anniversary we just celebrated, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Desmond Tutu in South Africa, a wonderful tradition. In fact, every major social movement in America's history has been fueled and driven, at least in part, by religion. Abolition of slavery, women's suffrage, child labor law reform, and of course, most famously, civil rights. But around the world, as Marinol knows so well, these movements, base communities and priests and lay people and catechists and bishops even sometimes, standing against oppression and injustice and violence. So we have a proud tradition. And when the left just ignores that or almost denies it or disdains it, and this isn't true of everyone, but so many people become almost, I would call them secular fundamentalists, like the religious fundamentalists. And they're opposed almost to any kind of expression of religion or faith in public life. And that's a serious mistake. The biggest mistake the left has made in these last few decades is conceding the whole territory of religion and values to the religious and political right. They've had the freedom to define religion any way they wanted to, and they've done so in a very partisan and ideological way, saying there are only two moral values issues, abortion and gay marriage. That's it. They've gotten away with it in part because the left has conceded that territory to them.
You do point out that there are several political options, and I think you draw them out beautifully. Could you go through that for us, the four political options, actually?
Well, there's a chapter in the book that talks about the need for really new political options. And the one, of course, the one that is dominant right now in this country is conservative on everything. So whether it comes to personal values and responsibilities and sexual morality and abortion and all those personal, family, moral values questions, conservative, but also then on economics and very aggressive American foreign policy and domestic policy, which has tax cuts for the wealthy at the heart of it while slashing programs to the poor. Conservative on everything is one. Liberal on everything is the other. And those have been the two. The liberals are on the decline, and they hardly have a vision anymore. After the election, a reporter said, "I guess your vision lost." I said, "No, mine wasn't running," because nobody was championing the poor as a moral value issue or Iraq as a religious question. The third is this libertarian option now, which is liberal on the personal family value questions, but conservative fiscally, sort of don't take my money and leave me alone, you know,
yeah,
which is, I think, the worst of all. The fourth option, I think, is really being strong on personal responsibility and being strong on affirming family and parenting and kids, but not scapegoating gay and lesbian people as if they're the ones responsible for the breakup of the heterosexual family, which is kind of silly. And being concerned about abortion as a moral issue, but talking about a consistent ethic of life wherever life is threatened, nuclear weapons or HIV, AIDS, poverty, racism, all of that, but a consistent ethic. And then having a traditional set of values, pro-family, pro-life, but then economically populist for low-income families against corporate power. On foreign policy, resisting this unilateral, preemptive, superpower foreign policy in favor of international law. And around the world, saying that 3 billion people living on $2 a day ought to be the primary foreign policy priority of all. That kind of option, I think, would be very popular with lots of people in this country, but neither party's offering it.
I recall after the election, President Bush said something about having a mandate and having political capital, and he intended to spend it. The folks that seem to presume that they have this mandate and the political capital are some people on the far religious right, like James Dobson. Have the religious right in that sense become lobbyists on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think they are claiming they're responsible in large part for the president's reelection. I think that's a bit overstated. I think security issues were pretty dominant, and frankly, the lack of a strong Democratic vision and candidate were a large part of this loss in the fall, too, for the Democrats. But they say that, and then now they want payback. They want their agenda to be enforced. And so I think they're flexing their political muscles, you might say. But what's important is now, and I see it happening around the country, that there is another kind of religious voice. A lot of people, I think, saw the way religion was used and abused, I would say, during the election. And in the media, they see only one point of view represented. And in the White House, they see a kind of a White House theology, almost a theology of war, a language of righteous empire way too often, and this sense of a divine mission for a country and president in a war on terrorism. And they say, wait, that's not my faith. I've got faith, too. Those aren't my values. And so I'm meeting all these people across the country. We're having town meetings disguised as book signings. Every time we have these sessions, thousands are showing up, and they're very diverse. There are evangelicals who don't feel represented by James Dobson, and there are millions of them. There are Catholics who don't feel spoken for by bishops who say there's only one issue on which you're allowed to vote, disregarding all the rest of Catholic social teaching. Mainline Protestants are coming in droves. Black church members who say, why is this such a white conversation? When they say evangelicals, they always just mean white evangelicals. Latino Christians are coming. Asians and Jews, rabbis are bringing their whole congregations out. Muslims are coming. And young people who say, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, and I want to be part of this conversation. So we're having an amazing time around the country, and it's sort of the rise of the non-religious right. That's not much of a name for a movement, but that's what I hear, that word, movement, all the time. So rather than just complaining about the religious right, it's time for progressive people of faith to organize and mobilize.
You're making me feel better already. wasn't there a rally in D.C. in March? A couple of hundred Christian pastors and I think a few rabbis and whatnot got together to say that the current budget that's just been put out is against the poor, that it doesn't reflect values, that it doesn't care for the poor?
Yeah, I had a chance to speak to the Democrats, the senators, in January, and I said, you've got to frame policy issues in a values context. I mean, the Republicans do that on their issues, but the Democrats haven't done that well at all. And so we did a memo to the Democrats saying, budgets are moral documents, reflecting the values and priorities of a church, of a nation, who's important, who's not, who suffers, who benefits, who bears the burden of fiscal responsibility and deficit reduction, for example. And I hear that language now creeping into the public conversation. And that's the conversation we ought to have. Make the budget a moral values conversation. Of the
world we forget. Do you believe that the separation of church and state is an American tradition worth preserving? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices and just click on Contact Us. Or call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARY-KNOLL.